You like Fireboy? I do.
You're listening to Your Tables on Fire, a weekly conversation with the hottest game designers on Kickstarter. Here comes your host, Jeff Beck.
Well, hello. Thanks for tuning in to Your Tables on Fire. This is episode number 38. All right, with me today we have two very special guests. This is Chris and Suzanne Zinsley, the founders of Cardboard Edison and the designers and publishers of Cobras. Chris and Suzanne, welcome to Your Tables on Fire.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Thanks a lot.
It is absolutely our pleasure. I have been looking forward to speaking to the two of you for some time, so this is a pleasure for, this is a real treat for me, so...
Cool.
Why don't we kick things off? Why don't you two take a minute and just introduce yourselves?
We are designers. We are the people behind Cardboard Edison, which other designers may know online for our blog that helps other designers. And currently we are moving into publishing, and we're going to be publishing our first game called Cobras.
That is very, very cool. So let's take a little trip back in time. What got you first interested in the tabletop hobby in the first place?
Since we started dating, we played board games. Most of them were mass market. And then we started getting into a little bit more of the hobby gaming. And we accidentally created a game one day, and we had some friends over for dinner.
This is true.
And,
how do you accidentally create a game?
So Chris, at the time, Chris is an editor, and he was working on a website that would give you alliterative phrases. And I would just type in phrases and try to make him guess what they were. And we actually had a lot of fun with that, and we had some friends over for dinner, and we're like, hey, can you guess what phrase we're saying? And they enjoyed it. So we're like, we should make a game. And we knew nothing about designing a game, publishing, playtesting, like nothing at all. So we started researching it, and Chris said, you know, we're doing all this research. It would be great if we could just share everything we're finding, if we could just share it with other people. And that's how the blog started. And then we play tested the game. It was really good. And we thought it was good. You know, you always think your first game is really good.
And then we
just started designing other games, and some of them work, some of them don't. And that's kind of how we got started, right? Am I missing anything?
Yeah, that's it.
Wow. So what happened to the game?
So we took it out to some cons and had it play tested, and play tested it here, and it's kind of on our shelf right now.
Back burner at the moment.
Yeah, we're thinking we might do something with it at some point, but we haven't figured out where it fits yet.
Okay, well, that's fair. But that's pretty cool, though, that you're still, you know, I think most people's first design they're so ashamed of that, you know, they burnt it years ago. So
that was our second design.
Yeah.
Our second design, that was the one we burned.
Yeah, that one was, that had a really cool concept.
It was a very interesting game.
I'll say
that much. Now you have to tell us about it. I mean, I'm dying to know.
Well, okay, so,
you're not getting off that easy. Come on.
So the name of the game was Elf Rage.
Okay.
And it was about heavily armed Christmas elves stalking the corridors of the North Pole's self-storage facility. It was inspired by a neon billboard for a self-storage sign that had some letters missing. So instead of saying self-storage, it said Elf Rage. And we thought, well, there's a game. That was right after we decided, we should be game designers, and we were getting inspiration from the weirdest places. And that second one, that was not a good game. But it did have a nice side effect, in that we actually designed, because we were total newbies, we designed a sequel to Elf Rage before we even playtested the first game.
Wow. You had the expansion ready to go.
Yeah, exactly. But we playtested both of them the same day, and we realized that the original was really bad. But the spin-off was actually pretty good, and so we ultimately ended up re-theming the spin-off, and that got picked up and was published in 2013. It's called Tessen.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the spin-off to the worst game you've ever designed became a published game.
True story.
That is pretty incredible. That is really incredible. Wow. Well, and actually, Tessen, I'm quite familiar with it. I actually own that game, so kudos. That's a great game.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, that's very fun. Boy, there's a lot to dig in on what you've just described here. But I guess the first thing I want to talk about is, so you had this idea for a game, and then you started doing research. I mean, so it sounds like you guys just jumped in completely head first. So what is it about game design that just spoke to you so strongly?
So we're both creative people. We met in college. He was a media arts major. I was an English major. So we both have that creative spark, and gaming is something we enjoy doing together. And we play games very differently. We use different strategies. We like different types of games. So when we come together and design a game, it's kind of like the best of both worlds for us. And it's something that we can do together, which for the most part works out really, really nicely. And so we decided, you know, let's just keep on doing this. And the more we were doing it, the more it grew, and it's growing, and it's turning out really, really well. It's a lot of fun. I think that's the main thing
I think it's fulfilling, like on like a pretty deep level for us. It's something that we connect over. You know, being able to do something creative and to work with each other on it is a really great thing, I think.
Yeah, and actually one of the really cool side effects of it is we have made like the best of friends in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't believe the quality of people that are contained in this community. And we've just, like, I think a lot of our close friends now are from the community, and we just feel so blessed to like know them and to have them in our lives. And everybody's, you know, for the most part, is just fantastic. And that's a huge draw for us also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit more about your blog, Cardboard Edison. Tell us a little bit about, I mean, you kind of explained the genesis of that, but tell us a little bit about, you know, what is it doing now? And, you know, for people who aren't familiar with it, what benefit could they get out of it?
So we started it out about 4 years ago, maybe has it been 4.5 years now? It's been a while. And when we started out, it was solely gathering links to online resources about game design. So articles about how to do a playtest or prototyping tips or how to pitch a publisher, things like that. And we do still gather those things. We publish around a dozen of them a week because one of the great things about the board game community is they're very giving, they're very helpful. You know, designers are very willing to share information. And so we just kind of go out and gather all of those things and put them together in one place to make them easy to find. Since we started the blog, we also have expanded to doing some original stuff. We have a few interview series where we talk with designers and publishers. We put out a series of industry reports. There was one series about board game licensing contracts. There's an award that we do each year. We're going into the second year now. That's an award for an unpublished game.
And that's a full contest, is that right? I mean, so people submit games, and there's a whole playtesting process.
That's correct.
Yeah, we're really excited about the contest. Last year, we had a lot of entries, more than we expected, which is great. And we have people in the industry. We have publishers and designers and just people who are heavy into the community as judges. And people submit a video pitch and rules. And then the judges read them and watch the video and judge it. And then we pick the top 10 finalists. And the top 10 finalists are played by judges. And the winner last year was Dragon the Beanstalk by Dan Kazar.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be published under the name The Blood of an Englishman by Renegade Games. Got picked up after it won the award.
All right. Well, that's really cool. And you guys also have, I mean, I think the first time I stumbled into you was your Twitter account, which is super, you know, if people aren't following you, they really should, because you guys just post all kinds of fantastic content and just, you know, what's new for game designers and what's a new article anyone can read. And it's very helpful.
Thanks.
Yeah, good stuff. So other than game design, do you guys play many games?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
We have regular game days at our place. We used to go out to some game stores pretty regularly, but unfortunately the closest ones to us closed. But we have people over all the time for gaming.
Mm. And what kind of games do you guys like?
Very different types, depending on if you're talking to Suzanne or to me.
Yeah, Chris likes the very simple but elegant games. I like the real heavy, crunchy games.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Is there a good balanced game that you both can appreciate and get out on the table?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a... we both love Patchwork.
Patchwork is excellent.
I think of two-player games.
Let's see, Jaipur. We play Jaipur quite frequently.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else have we been playing recently? World's Fair 1893.
Yes.
I've been playing a lot of that.
Imhotep,
oh yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of good ones.
For groups, we like Ladies and Gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fun little party game.
I don't think I know that one.
Oh, it's really neat. We played it at a game store, and I told Chris, I'm like, I need this game. We actually picked it up like that same week, which is not something we normally do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a really, really neat game.
It's one of the unique things about it is it's an asymmetrical team game where you work in two-player teams, and each member on the team is basically playing a different game, but you still have to interact with your teammate to win.
Really?
Yeah.
It's very clever. Well, so we're talking about games. Let's talk about your guys' game. So, Cobras.
Yes.
So for those that aren't familiar with it, can you give us the pitch?
Yeah, Cobras is a trick-taking game where players are representing villagers. And in this village, there's a big problem with cobras. They're just all over the place, and they're biting everyone. And the authorities decided to try and solve the problem by putting out a bounty on the cobras. And the players are all very enterprising individuals, and so they came up with a plan of breeding cobras so that they could then turn them in for the bounty. And it's a great plan until the authorities kind of get wise to the scheme, and the authorities eventually will cancel the bounty. And when that happens, if the players are left with any cobras, then they're going to get bit, meaning they take a penalty. So as you're playing the game, it takes place over a series of tricks. Many standard trick-taking rules apply, but the sort of twist in our game is that when you lose a trick, you're going to collect some cobras and keep them in front of you, and then when you win a trick, you'll cash them in for points, and the scale of points for the number of cobras that you get, it kind of has a sweet spot. It kind of rises and rises until it hits that sweet spot, and then it drops off pretty steeply. So you have to time when you win and lose your tricks just right to kind of maximize your score.
Interesting. So when you first set out to design Cobras, was trick-taking first and foremost on your mind?
It was, we'd heard about this this anecdote that inspired the game. It actually is something that's known in economics circles. It's called the Cobra Effect. And we'd heard about this and thought it would be a great setting for a game. And so we had the theme first, and then at some point we sort of hit on trick-taking as a match for it. And it came together pretty quickly after that.
Interesting. And for your other games, have you always started with a theme first and then evolved into the mechanic, or is it kind of come and go?
No, it varies greatly based on the project. Sometimes we'll have a really great theme. Other times we'll have a really cool mechanic and we have to try to figure out a theme that it makes sense for. What we like to do is we like to really bring them together.
Yeah. And what often ends up happening is very frequently we end up retheming the game in the middle. That we seem to not be able to get away from that. In some cases, such as Elf Rage, it's all for the better.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so take us back to, you know, maybe the very first time you had Cobras, and, you know, what did that look like, the very first game?
So the prototype we used playing cards for, with little keys to help us with gameplay, and it was actually a lot of fun from the beginning. We, you know, we did some tweaking and everything, but after we played it, we were like, you want to play again? Yeah. All right, let's go. And, you know, we played it for, you know, a while on that first day, and that's kind of when we knew, oh, this is something we should keep working on.
And this was before we had the two-player version, and we were, like, simulating multiple players each. Like, we would each pretend to be two players, basically a solo test. And even with all of the overhead of trying to manage two hands of cards and keep track of score and everything that's going on, it was still a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Wow. Has it evolved much since then?
You know, it's matured and developed. I don't know if it's really evolved. It's been refined. I think that's the best way to describe it. We kind of found the sweet spots.
We fiddled with the numbers a little bit, but the big chunks kind of fell into place pretty quickly.
Well, that's pretty lucky. That's great.
We did spend a little bit of time working on the two-player mode, and then also more recently a solo mode. So that's taken up some of our development time on it.
Interesting. So how do you play a trick-taking game in solo mode?
So in the solo mode, you're going to deal out the cards as if there were three players. And the other two stacks of cards are going to be effectively dummy players. And you'll reveal cards from their stack. One of them is going to be face down, so you don't know what they're going to do. The other one is face up, so you have a little bit of future knowledge about what that player is going to do. The other twist that makes the trick-taking aspect work is normally you need to, like as in many trick-taking games, if you're able to follow suit, then you have to. Dummy players obviously can't do that. So in the solo mode for Cobras, regardless of whatever suit the dummy player plays, it is considered to be following suit. So you're kind of managing your hand and you're managing your expectations of what the other players might do or not do.
Well, that's very clever. So, you know, you talked about the community and how beneficial it is and, you know, just what a great community it is. How have you been able to involve the community in the design of Cobras?
Through playtesting, you know, they were so helpful with feedback. It's amazing how willing people are to help you. And I think that has really helped us the most.
Definitely. We've brought it out to some local conventions here in New Jersey, run by a group called Double Exposure. They have events around the year. We've brought it to Unpub down in Baltimore, as well as Unpub Minis in the area. Pretty much any chance that we've gotten, the community has helped us refine the game and kind of make sure it's as tight as it can be.
Mm-hmm. So at what point did you decide Cobras was ready for Kickstarter?
probably, I don't know, about 10 months ago or so. Mm-hmm. We knew the game was, you know, pretty close to being finished. And we had our friend Eric Alvarado over. We were doing playtesting and we were talking to him.
We had not been planning on kickstarting this at first.
No.
Oh, really?
No, we were planning on shopping it around to publishers. But in talking with Eric, Eric and I were talking about doing some sort of project together. And he said, why don't we publish Cobras? And I said, yeah, that's a great idea. And then we told Chris, and Chris was like...
I found out about it.
Yeah. okay. So we signed Eric on as our project manager for this, and we started the ball rolling. And it's been pretty intense for the past few months. But it's been exciting, and it's really cool to see it from this end. Because, you know, we are always on the other end of Kickstarter. We're backing campaigns and everything. So to actually run it and see everything that goes into it has been super cool.
Mm-hmm. Now, with your other game, Tessin, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that went through Kickstarter as well.
That did. That was published through Van Ryder Games. So we were the designers, but we didn't do...
Right. But I guess what I'm wondering is did you have any involvement with the Kickstarter campaign, or were you completely hands off?
I mean, we helped out a little bit. The publisher, AJ Porfirio, he would kind of run a few things by us, and we would, you know, kind of offer some suggestions. But it was pretty much him running the show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So very different. So so given that then you're experiencing this now, is it everything you expected it to be?
Pretty much.
and more.
Yeah, it's pretty much what we were expected. We're really thrilled. We think it's going at a really good rate. We're so happy that we've gotten lots of positive feedback about mm-hmm. it. There hasn't been anything that has kind of thrown us for a loop yet. I don't know if I should say that. Maybe I should knock on wood.
Yeah, it's not over yet.
Well, I mean, one thing that... That I know has surprised me in a really good way is how many people are excited about the game to the point of like kind of creating original content, like putting themselves out there. And like there was one person who created a print and play box because the campaign offers a print and play file. So that you can try out the game before you decide if you want to back the project. And someone came up with a box that you can also print and put your print and play in.
wow.
Yeah, someone took the cover image and incorporated it into a very popular online meme that was just weird and hilarious. And you know, people have offered to do foreign language translations.
Yeah, we actually already have one. We have a translation into Japanese,
mm-hmm.
and we're working on one into Spanish, and who knows, we might get a couple more languages.
Yeah, so people have just been in, like, incredibly willing to jump in and volunteer and just do fun things just for the heck of it, and that's been really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is super cool. Well, so... At this stage, you have your manufacturer all lined up. That's all good to go?
Yep, we are totally good to go. As soon as the campaign ends, we are sending it out. And
files are ready.
Yep, files are ready. Everything is everything is all set.
Hmm. Are there any potential stretch goals that might slow that process down a little bit?
No, because of the game, we can't really add a whole lot of, things that would change the game that much. So the stretch goals are more just upgrades to the game itself, to the components.
So thicker cardstock and, chipboard for the tokens and things like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Well, so... After the campaign is done and you ship it off to your manufacturer, what's next for you guys?
Well, let's see. What is next? That's a really interesting question because we're already in the middle of a bunch of those things. So we have a couple of games that that we've designed and that we are not going to be publishing ourselves. We're going to be licensing these to other publishers. And they have not been officially announced yet, but they should be pretty soon. And so we're in very late stage development with the publishers on those.
Yeah. We'll be in the thick of the Cardboard Edison Award because that submissions open December 1st and end January, the end of January.
We also, on the Cardboard Edison front, our newest project is going to be coming out in the very near future. That is a directory of board game publishers.
Oh, wow.
And
we have some more interviews lined up.
More interviews, yeah.
Yeah, for our Meaningful Decision series and our Process and Publisher series.
Mm-hmm. We have other prototypes that we're working on.
Yeah, playtesting. We do playtest for people. And then, yeah, we have a whole board of game ideas that we want to start designing in our in our time.
We're also thinking if we're really lucky, maybe we'll get some sleep one of these days.
Maybe.
Maybe.
That can wait. Come on. So, then, you know, the next time you have a game polished up and ready to go, do you think you're going to do the Kickstarter thing again? Or have you kind of, you've had your experience and maybe you'll be done?
No, we're doing this as the first time using our game so that we can see all the things, like what not to do and everything. And if any mistakes are made, we want them to be made on our design. We think that the designer and publisher relationship is really vital to a game's success. So for our future designs, they'll be licensed out to other publishers. And for games that we publish in the future, they will be from other designers.
Hmm. Interesting. So Cardboard Edison won't be publishing any more games by the two of you.
That's the plan.
That's the plan. that's our thinking, but who knows what the future holds.
Hmm. So will Cardboard Edison, the publishing entity, have a particular niche, or are you just going to look for interesting games?
So I don't think it's going to have a niche, but I think it's going to be it's going to be hard for us to decide on a game to publish. Right now, it's Chris and myself, and we like very, very different games. Mm-hmm. And if Eric continues on with future projects, he is, a third voice also. So it would have to be a game that everyone on the team really believes in and is passionate about. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what that is. We haven't even started down that road yet. Just kind of talking, but nothing in practice.
Sure. Well, so a key audience for your Tables on Fire is the aspiring game designer, someone who's putting together, maybe their first game or preparing their first Kickstarter. You guys have done so much research. You guys are the experts. So give us your absolute best advice. What would you tell someone who's launching their first project?
Oh, gosh.
Man, this is always a difficult question, and it's always one that I feel unprepared for.
Well, I would say check out our blog. It has lots of good tips.
Right. That's also, fair.
A little self-promotion there.
Also, playtest and really listen to feedback. And even if you don't think the feedback is valuable at the time, still jot it down because something may come of it in the future.
Yeah, that's a really crucial skill, is being willing to change your design. Don't get too hung up on having it play exactly the way that you imagine it in your head. That's something that even we, having done a handful of designs over the last several years, and lots of playtesting of other designs, it's even something that we struggle with. We will get the same bit of feedback a few more times than really we should before it sinks in and we say to ourselves that we need to change something or address an issue that keeps coming up. So definitely be willing to accept that outside feedback.
Yeah, totally.
All right. Well, very good. Well, Chris and Suzanne, it's time to shift gears. It's time to put aside Kickstarter and Cobra and Cardboard Edison, and it's time to focus on the true purpose of this podcast, which is the Game Design Challenge. So, for those that don't know, here's how this works. I'm going to pick a random theme. I'm going to present that to you, and then you two can talk about it, think it over, maybe do a little bit of arguing, whatever is necessary, but ultimately pitch back to me what that game might be.
Okay.
Sounds good.
You guys are up for that?
Totally.
Let's do it.
Okay, fantastic. So I'm going to find a theme, and that theme is going to be social media for hamsters.
Wow. That's okay. Social media
for hamsters. Nice. Okay.
Well, we should have some kind of wheel.
Yeah, the wheel is a given. Definitely.
Yeah, we totally need a
maybe
wheel.
A spinner?
A spinner?
Maybe a spinner, do you think?
No.
No? You don't like spinners?
I don't want to do the spinner. So
this is easy for you guys.
Yeah. Well, except for the subject matter. This one's crazy.
I'm glad I'm glad we got you a good one.
So, all right, so we have the rondel.
Mm-hmm. So here's what I'm wondering. Does Yelp count as social media? Because if so, then it could be like, you know, hamsters talking about where they find, you know, the best wheels to run in and the best tubes to crawl down. And, you know, they can rate the water supply over at the you know, left-hand corner of the cage, things like that.
Yeah, that's totally right.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. They could take pictures of themselves, like, eating, like, the little food, like, little foodies.
Oh, yeah, right. There you go.
Little selfies.
Food selfie snapshots.
Yeah, hamster, food, selfie, selfies.
So how do you do that in a game, though?
In a game. So I guess the players are hamsters.
Makes sense.
Right. So they're on the rondel.
Yeah, sure.
And then what?
So each section on the rondel represents a different action that you can take. So if you've got, here's a question, are all of the hamsters on one rondel, or do you have like multiple hamsters? Do you have like a team, are you managing like a team of hamsters, or do you just have the one hamster?
I think just one hamster.
Just the one hamster?
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe you have, you have like your own personal rondel.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and so totally. You have to decide like how fast to run on the wheel, which is like how far ahead on the track you go.
Yeah. Yeah, but then the faster you run, you get tired.
You get tired, sure. Mm-hmm. Of course you would. So so then you would have to kind of like maybe manage your energy somehow. You get like
are we done with the Yelp idea, or are you still trying to incorporate that?
I think you got to get the social media in there somehow. So yeah. maybe it's Yelp, maybe it's the selfie thing. I think that probably, like, so if each of these rondels is, like, a different section, a different activity, then you're kind of going from activity to activity, and certain ones are going to be better for you to do at certain points in the game, right? And so you have to decide, well, is it better for me to use more energy to run further ahead so I can do a, you know, a selfie with food pellets, or is it... Or, you know, is it better for me to stay close by and get a drink of water or run through the tube maze?
Right. Would it be co-op? Probably not.
It could be co-op. I've been picturing competitive up to this
point. Yeah, I think competitive works.
Yeah. I mean, hamsters are pretty competitive, right?
I think so.
they're always training on the wheels, you know? So.
Yeah, that's true.
Naturally.
Yeah.
And trying to escape.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That could be, too. They could escape.
I wonder if we should have, like, a little hamster maze aspect to the game. So, like, you've got, you know, you're managing your actions on the hamster wheel, but also somehow you're, like, running through a maze to get from location to location.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that could totally work.
Maybe too much, or it may be just perfect.
That's pretty amazing. Now, what are you going to call this game?
Like, Hamsterly, or, like, some like website or like it's like hamster but you take out all the vowels
or, there you go.
Hamster. Yeah, it's hamster.
Oh wow, that is pretty awesome. Well, I'm hoping that Cardboard Edison can publish that one as well. Oh, well done. Well, Chris and Suzanne, it's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Great. Thank Likewise. You so much for having us.
Yeah.
It's been my pleasure. And best of luck to the two of you for the remainder of your campaign.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that was Chris and Suzanne Zinsley, the founders of Cardboard Edison and the creators of Cobras, currently on Kickstarter. You've been listening to your Tables on Fire. Check out our website for show notes and a link to Cobras on Kickstarter. That's www.yourtablesonfire.com. You can follow us on Twitter at TableFire. Our show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and even BoardGameGeek. Hit us up on any of those sites and give us a review. We really want to hear your feedback. Well, until next time, go light it up.